What is up, Daddy Gang? It is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy.
Christina Aguilera, welcome to Call Her Daddy.
Hi.
I'm staring at your nails.
Oh, yes.
What's happening?
They're so fun. You know, they're, you know, it's open to interpretation.
Is that a vagina?
It could be a vagina. It could be lips. But two in the same, both pleasure points, you
Holy
know.
Shit.
And then on the, and then there's an actual mouth on the, you know, and tongue on the
This couldn't be more appropriate for a Call Her Daddy episode. Casual Christina Aguilera is like, it could be lips, it could be my pussy lips.
Yes,
God bless
yes.
you all. Up for interpretation.
It's amazing. Yeah, I love it.
I need to gas you up for a second, okay?
Oh.
Because just in case anyone fucking forgot, you are a 7-time Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter. You have sold more than 75 million records worldwide. No big fucking deal. You're an international pop icon, voice of a generation, fiance, mother, chief brand advisor, and co-founder of Playground. And this is your first ever podcast, and you chose Call Her Daddy, and I am so fucking honored.
I'm so honored.
Dude, I can't believe when I heard you'd never done a podcast, I was like, sit down, baby girl. Let's go.
I said yes to you because I've seen you pop up on social media, which didn't exist when I was coming up in this business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been doing this since I was like 6 or 7, basically. So, but you feel safe. And I appreciate that, you know, because I've been through the gamut of a lot of interviews and people that, you know, I grew up at a time where it was like appropriate to be inappropriate and ask, you know, crazy things. But I always feel it's never like the most intelligent way to go, because when you make someone feel safe, they want to open up more. And you always do. And you're so pretty, by the way.
Oh, my God. Right back at you.
Thought.
No, I really appreciate that, because I agree. I think that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about today, is just like your journey has been so public and you've been in front of people for so many years that it's like I almost feel like people feel like they deserve a piece of you, like you're a piece of the public. And I think it's important to sit down and like humanize people in those situations, because it's like you're a human being, you have feelings, you've gone through shit.
Yes.
You're also like the queen of reinvention. You have had so many fucking eras. It's like iconic, iconic, iconic. Aside from like the present moment, what is your most favorite era of your own?
I mean, it's got to be probably Stripped and Dirty and Beautiful and Fighter, Can't Hold Us Down. You know, it was the time when I was turning, you know, I was 20, 21. I'd already gotten my foot in the door and my first album was successful, but it was still very like play it by the rules and, you know, very given a, you know, set by, you know, label, very label driven. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I, you know, was like, you know, I have to do songs that mean something to me and are valid to who I am, and being fearless in talking about anything. And that includes sexuality. Mm-hmm. I felt that there was like a lot of shame and fear around the subject. And especially, you know, as a woman, we're raised with a lot of stigma. There's a lot of, you know, it's so layered and it's tough to be a woman. So I wanted to really be who I was and make it a safe space for, you know, everyone to feel good and make it a conversation.
That era of yours for women in general, but it's also so funny. We can look back on it, but I know there was pushback during that era.
Definitely.
Which we'll talk about, because it's so funny. Like now it's like, oh, go off, Christina. But it's also like crazy to then read the tabloids back then.
Oh, 100%.
Well, first, how does it feel like the amount of people that still recreate your outfits, whether it was red carpet, music videos? Like it's insane. Every fucking Halloween, it's like Christina everywhere. How does that feel that that's still so powerful in people's minds?
It's incredible. I love it so much, just because, you know, it now it's celebrated and it feels good. And even the people that, you know, got it then, but there was a lot of pushback. There was a lot of, you know, double standards with it. And there was a lot of, you know, because I went on tour with, you know, Justin. We did the Strip Justified tour. And there were things where I was just like, why is it okay for him and not okay for me? You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it was just like I was constantly pushing back. And my way, I mean, it was so inappropriate sometimes, the things that were asked about that era.
It's so crazy to me. And I agree with you, like that comparison of like a man doing the same thing, which we'll get into. Because it's like, I'm doing the same thing, and yet I'm being called a slut, and like he's like the boy next door. This episode is presented by Sparkling Ice. Turn up summer with Sparkling Ice. They have over 17 anything but subtle flavors, all made with zero sugar and packed with vitamins and antioxidants. Iced tea and lemonade, strawberry watermelon, tropical punch, peach nectarine. Yum. Crank up the flavor. Sparkling Ice, anything but subtle.
2 years ago, I became pregnant with a baby I desperately wanted. During a routine ultrasound, I learned that the fetus would have a fatal condition and never survive. I had to flee my own state to receive treatment. I think Donald Trump bears an incredible amount of responsibility for these restrictive laws. We need leaders that will protect our rights, and that's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
This episode is brought to you by Monday Hair Care. Daddy gang, nobody likes Mondays. Am I right? We're all sobbing. We're all sobbing and we're barely getting out of bed on a Monday. But Monday Hair Care is here to flip the script with its award-winning formulas. No more bad hair days, daddy gang. Monday Hair Care is turning Mondays into a reason to celebrate good hair, which I love, thank God, with 7 new products like a leave-in conditioner, dry shampoo, a curl line, and body wash. And daddy gang, every single thing is under $10. Yes. And the smell is to die for. Okay. I want my hair smelling like something that Matt wants to be engulfed in. I want him to come up to me and go, oh my God, you smell amazing. Oh my God, what is that in your hair? So daddy gang, reclaim the week with Monday at all leading retailers. Visit mondayhaircare.com to find a stockist near you.
Let's go back to the first time that you stepped on a stage. You were 9 years old competing on the show Star Search. Yeah. Whose idea was it for you to do a show like that?
I was at that time raised by my mom and my grandma. Mm-hmm. So strong women. And my grandma specifically really was so proud and, you know, really pushed it to be like taken seriously as something to be professional, because singing always just came to me as like this release. I grew up in a chaotic, you know, upbringing as a very young child, and always kind of like feeling like a protector and all that, and always felt isolated sort of in my situation. Mm-hmm. And so singing, it was The Sound of Music that first inspired me to sing. And from then I just, you know, it was like just a release and a form of expression for me before I even understood what that meant. And then whenever my parents got divorced, we moved in with my grandma was like, you know, this could be something. And
it's so crazy that you're like, I just saw it as like a release where I was using like, and meanwhile, we're like, we see you as one of the most truly talented singers of period, point blank, like hit notes that no one can. Thank you. But you kind of mentioned your childhood. And again, I think something in media is like, we see this version of you that's so put together. And it's like, oh, it's Christina Aguilera. She has money. She has fame. You mentioned that you kind of grew up in an abusive household, but mm-hmm. Do you remember like the first moment you realized like this is unsafe or something was wrong?
Fear. You know, you have to listen to your body, and you know, fear is something that you know, you innately feel, you know. So right then and there, you know, something doesn't feel good and it's not right. And then, you know, having so much compassion for my mother and seeing, you know, when you see someone being hurt, someone you love, you know, I still, you know, at 42, I'm still affected by this. It's under the surface. Trauma never leaves you. You just figure out ways to try and heal mm-hmm. it. And to me, it's therapeutic to speak about it. Mm-hmm. And I saw my mom, you know, go through so much that I think that instilled a level of purpose for me, in the sense of I always want to try and empower other people and people in situations where they feel voiceless and unheard. And I just have such a deep-rooted need to try and, you know, use my voice. And I would later discover and understand what that meant to me. But it never leaves you. And you're triggered when you see movies. When I, you know, I just immediately, you go to that place. Mm. You know, and I've done a lot of healing and a lot of growth, mm-hmm. And releasing, you know, a lot of anger comes with that. A lot of shame comes with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it takes a lot for a woman to leave those situations as well. And my heart goes out because some of them don't leave them. And, you know, and that could vary in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's financial. Sometimes it's fear of authorities not helping and then it getting worse, or you know, sometimes they're, you know, sometimes it feels like there's no way out, but you know, my mom, luckily, you know, she really, we would do these drives from, at the time it was the last straw, from Jersey to my grandma's in Pittsburgh, and we would just do these nightly, just me, her, and my little sister, and we would just like do the night drive. But you know, all of that, it stays with you, but it's become a part of what's important to me is my message.
When you say you would do these drives, was it while your mom had
talked about that before? Yeah. You're good, girl.
Yeah, fuck.
5 minutes. Well,
no, but I'm like, holy fuck. Like, was that when you were still, your mom hadn't left your dad yet, but you were like, or had they left?
There was some back and forth. Mm. There was some back and forth. There's always the tug of like, I'm never going to do it again. You know, there's sweet talking involved. There's a lot of shame also in like, well, why don't you just leave? It is so much more complicated than that. And it's a mental breakdown of self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And you start to believe someone else's narrative and verbal abuse to you. And it self-esteem is something that can break down so easily, even to the most powerful woman executive. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you do. This, you know, we can go on stage and have these larger than life personas, but all it takes is for you to believe someone's negative narrative about you. Once it's in there and it's working its way in, that's why I'm like so adamant with my daughter. I'm just like, first time somebody ever hits you, the first time somebody makes you feel not right about yourself, woo, girl, I'm so protective, mama bear.
And as you should be, because like you said, like you have that trauma in you that like you're like, I watch a fucking movie and I can feel it. Yeah. And I love what you said about the concept of when someone says, why don't you just leave? When people say that, it's such an ignorant statement that like pisses me off. I had a loved one that was in an abusive relationship. Yeah. And you're like, it's so much more fucking complex.
Oh, yeah.
But to leave, do you remember the moment that was like your mom was like, we're out?
Yes, officially when the abuse started to really turn onto me. You know, we were living in Japan for like 3 years, so we mm-hmm. were super isolated, which is where I started singing. And looking back, that's where I started to kind of, I would like sing out of this window. I have like a thing about like windows, and like they just, when you're feeling just, you know, mm-hmm. trapped, I don't know, there's something about the representation of a window and just like there's hope on the other side, you know. And so that's where I started, you know, singing these songs from like The Sound of Music and just to myself. And just that image, I'll always remember. It's like a core memory of just like there's like something on the other side. There's like a bigger world. There's a bigger purpose. I felt it at a really young age. But yes, it was like a matter of things. And like you're in a foreign country, where my dad was in the army, so we're on an army base. I mean, in a situation like that too, abuse runs rampant. You know, the walls are paper thin, you know, where we're living. And you can hear abuse just happening on the other side of the wall. You can hear, I mean, you know, it's terrifying. And it's like all you want to do is help. But a lot of times, even when you call the authorities, you don't get the help that you need. And then the door shuts and you're with your abuser again. So it's so important to try and research all you can, speak to people that you can trust, and really, you know, try and get yourself out of these situations.
Yeah.
Because, you know, worst case scenario, you won't, you know, live to tell the story about it.
Was it hard for your mother to, as a single mother, take care of you and your sister? Like, then you started making money. Were you kind of providing for your family?
Yes.
Yes, sweetheart.
Yes, still am. But you mm-hmm. know what? In this role too, it comes with responsibility, mm-hmm. and responsibility that, you know, I know is destined for me, and I take on, and I take it on, you know, well. When you're in those situations, you grow up really fast and you become like an immediate caretaker and protector of the person mm-hmm. that's being hurt. And so, yeah, this is just like kind of like my role.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All my dogs are rescues. Like, you know, I'm just that person.
Your mother. Your mother.
Yes, I'm a mother.
I think back and I'm like 12 years old. You join the Mickey Mouse Club, Brittany, Justin. And I'm thinking about like how wild that time must have been for your life. What do you remember like learning at 12 about the industry at that time?
It's a work ethic. You know, it teaches you work ethic. You're given mm-hmm. a schedule, you know, where you are on a call sheet. You know, mm-hmm. like it's very disciplined, and you either built for that or you're not, you mm-hmm. know. And it's something that you realize very quickly if you know, you're cut out for that kind of lifestyle. It's hectic. It's chaotic. It's go, go, go. It's on the run. And that only builds, you know, the more you create. And I have to say, and my mom would always say this too, you know, she wasn't like your typical, like I would be around these kids who were just like really forced to do this, you know, and my heart would break for them. And my mom would be like, what is wrong with her? Like, you know, because you see these mothers and the kid doesn't even want to do it. But it was just, this is what I was born to do. So it was something that we really knew. And I pushed, you know, for the performances to happen again, like, but just in the most, I think, organic way to start, just like because I loved it.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I was around a bunch of other kids who really loved it too. Like, it was just, you know, born performers.
Right.
And it was really cool to feel that energy because, you know, coming up in school in the town that I grew up, it wasn't really like, you know, it's a sports town, you know, and that kind of thing was very celebrated, but like arts and creativity and whatnot, you have that in Pittsburgh. But yeah, I just didn't have a lot of kids that truly loved doing that, and those kids were just how talented everyone mm-hmm. was. Ryan Gosling, like, so you know, the Carrie Russell, there was just so many people that it was just like, wow, what a casting agent, you know, to get everybody totally. Together.
I do relate to like feeling a little bit like you're out of place where you grew up, and it only exacerbates the feeling of like wanting to get out and wanting to find like-minded people.
Yes.
But it's so interesting also hearing you talk, because it's like, it feels like you were almost made to have to grow up very quickly in many ways, where
in
like
many ways,
your yes. ambition immediately led you to working at a young age.
Yes.
Your family situation, you had to grow up quickly.
Yes.
Is there anything that you wish that you could have done more as like a child and in your younger life that you didn't really get to have a normal childhood?
That's a good question. In really thinking about it, probably no.
Like, I love my life.
sometimes I would, you know, because I was working a lot. But it's I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to, I wanted to work, mm-hmm. you know. I've always operated on like fight or flight,
yeah.
you know, in many different ways. And the more successful you are, of course, more is going to come with that. That's very demanding and very scrutinizing.
Do you think, though, there's the part of you that was really ambitious?
Yes.
And then naturally, like, we are who we are from, like, our childhood and nature versus nurture. Like, when you say, like, you were always running, wanting to go, have you connected that at all to also, like, your childhood?
It could have been. Mm-hmm. I haven't really dissected that part, but I always dreamt really big, you mm-hmm. know. I always dreamt really big, and it could be mm-hmm. looking for some sort of maybe escapism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think half the people that are in this business where we need, you know, it sucks because we're the most sensitive people on the planet, yet we're looking for like, you know, but we have this like, you know, alter ego that we have to turn on to get the work done and to, you know, follow a schedule. But also that makes us so vulnerable
totally.
And in needing some kind of weird validation.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. Your breakout solo, Genie in a Bottle. I was going to say top the charts. That's like a fucking understatement. It took over the world. What do you remember about the day that song was released?
I was still in New York, I was on my own pretty early too, trying to get a record deal. And so I was like, you know, house hopping from like odd places, from my manager's house at the time to another manager. Like, it was very odd and weird. And I would, again, mama bear, like, never with my daughter. Like, I would be so like protective and overseeing all that, which is a whole other story. But in New York, yeah, was where I started hearing it on the radio for the first time. So the album wasn't completely done and out, and I was just remember hearing that, and I was just like, oh my god. And it took me back to like driving around the car in Pittsburgh and only hoping that I would like hear my song one day on the radio and just dreaming about it. Again, big dreamer, Sagittarius, very like, you know, sky's the limit. We're gonna do this. So it was the most amazing feeling in the world.
Yeah. And I think, again, it's almost like dissecting like what everyone was watching in the world was like Jeannie in a Bottle, Christina Aguilera, like this hot, amazing, talented young woman. Then you're saying like, oh, I'm like living with managers. I'm like kind of in sketchy situations where the world probably wouldn't even fucking fathom that Christina Aguilera wasn't like set up and all good. But what were you emotionally going through at that time?
Oh man, that's a loaded question. What was I emotionally going through at that time? I mean, looking back, I didn't have much time to even think about anything. I was given the schedule. I was told what to do, you know, told what to do. My true opinion didn't really matter from everything, you know. Like, I remember, like, you know, being told what to wear, what the image was going to be, and, you know, not feeling super comfortable. That's also the product of a kid being raised in the business, too, you know, growing up and, like, you're constantly being told by adults and mainly men, you know, how and what to be. And you're hearing conversations, too, of what their ideal, you know, woman should be and look like. And so at a young, impressionable age, like, I just remember it was just so you take certain things on and then you have to like reprogram to think for yourself and what makes sense for you. So it's a lot, you know, to take on. So your dreams are coming true, but you're not quite getting to be the person that you want to be and telling the stories you want to tell.
It's like so helpful.
I didn't live through all that for nothing.
No, like, and like, but straight up, I will be real with you. I really think it's so helpful to hear you talk about this, because I remember myself sitting at home with my older sister watching these videos and to know that like this first era, not to take anything away from it, but like that wasn't fully you. Like that was like a lot of men in a room constructing like, let's have her hair look like this and let's like have her wear this, which I get is part of the industry. But also then my like heart goes out for baby Christina, because I'm like that age for a young woman to already be dealing with like insecurities and figuring yourself out, and then to have men be like, we need this, you were like exposed to such a different level of criticism and someone being so fixated on your looks, like how did that affect your self-worth?
I mean, it's a lot. I mean, you could only imagine. It's difficult enough growing up and trying to figure it out away from the camera, but being, you know, in front of it and, you know, scrutinized and picked apart and judged, and everybody's got a different opinion. That's the one thing I learned really early on, is like, whoa, no matter what I do, like, somebody's gonna be anti it and somebody's not gonna be happy with it. And I was like, and I'd always diaried and journaled, and like, I always had this, thank God, this core sense of myself and what I wanted my purposes and my messages to do and to help. And that's what I feel like kept me riding that core line of like bringing me back to real purpose and to be authentic with what I did.
Then you decided, fuck this. I'm going to add my twist and add actually Christina into the mix of who I am and what I want to be. And you came out with the Dirty music video, which is so fucking iconic. I was watching it this morning just being like, every time I just get excited to watch it. But at the time, the press pinned you as this bad girl. They were slut shaming you. There were literally celebrities coming out being like, God damn, like she like looks like a whore. She looks like a slut, which is 100%. So fucking crazy, because as I was watching it, rewatching it this morning, I was like, it's such a major celebration of the female body and sexuality. How do you remember breaking away from what everyone wanted you to do and making this happen? Slash, then how did those comments affect you once you released it?
Yeah, so many things popping through my mind. Yes.
Yep, let's go.
Yeah, like 10 answers mm-hmm. in there that I can think of. But yes, I was actually surprised, because like I was so in my zone of just like expressing and creating this album and just truly trying to make every facet of it speak of myself as a woman, and I didn't want to fit a box of like I'm sweet and vulnerable and demure and I'm gonna, you know, do the programmed, you know, pop format, but I'm not any particular one thing or one brand. And that's mm-hmm. what I did not like about the business, is the fact that they immediately try to box you and label it so mm-hmm. that it's easier for them to understand. But it was hard, you know, being a kid and being like, oh my God, I'm just trying to live my life. I'm 21. I'm having fun. Like, these were my college years,
right?
You know, this was my moment, except everybody could see it. But I was having, you know, I'm an artist at the end of the day. This is how I express myself, you right. know. And I wasn't just coming with Dirty, you know. Then we came with Beautiful, and then we mm-hmm. came with Fighter, which was a representation kind of, you know, my past and going against the grain of people that I felt really wronged me. Because that's another thing, you know, people steal from you, people that are so close to you. I remember being so devastated about people that really disappointed me to my core, that I was like, I feel really alone, you know, like it really and then you want to retreat, and then you want to get defense mechanisms up, and then you don't trust anyone, like as if I didn't already have trust issues, you know, from my childhood.
I was about to say,
it's just like layers on layers on layers. But in any case, you know, it's part of my journey. It's what I was meant to go through. And honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way, because had I not gone through all these things, I wouldn't sing the way I do. I wouldn't create the way I do. I wouldn't write the way I do. I was like a sponge. I just like took it all in. And when I was ready to just be like, no more, I don't care. And I remember being quoted saying, you know, I don't care this next record if I sell one record or 1 million. Like all the cool like accolades and stuff, that's amazing, I'm grateful, but at the end of the day I have to like sit with myself and feel like I'm contributing a bigger thing to the world than just a pop song and a chart and an award. Like it's deeper than that to me, and that's what I set out to do with Stripped, and I was able to do it, thank God, you know, after getting my foot in the door. But I was gonna then play by my own rules and represent the kind of woman that I wanted to be.
I'm just like sitting here a little, not in shock, but I will say, like, you truly never know what you're going to get when someone walks in a door. And I'm picturing Christina Aguilera, like, grew up obsessing over you, had posters, like, you're so fucking normal. I don't know where I would be if, like, at this age I started working, and at this age I'm living with creepy managers, and then this age people are stealing from you. And, like, to see, like, you sitting here and having such, like, a grasp on what happened to you, but every statement you constantly are like, but I'm grateful, and, like, I have perspective. And, like, yeah. It's really cool to see how you've kind of taken ownership of what you can. Mm-hmm. Don't give any of those bastards like any fucking out, though. I look back at articles and I feel like there were so many comments on your Lord. You're like, oh, the articles. You're like, sweetie, which ones? Take a sip. You're like, is there alcohol here? No. Were you happy being known as the tiny girl with the big voice? Like, how did you feel about your body as a young woman, that the world is commenting on your body?
It was crazy growing up, and then, yeah, hearing people talk about, I mean, everything. It's you know, having opinions on everything. Your looks, your voice, your style, it's everything.
Back then, you also exuded this, like, confidence sexually, like, on stage and in your music. And for the world, we were all like, oh, my God, like, I want to be like her. Like, she's so sexy and beautiful and smart and talented. How did you feel about your sexuality back then?
I wanted to always own it. You know, it was important to me. I didn't I think also, you know, the older I got and the more, and by that time, you know, for most people that would maybe be in your like 30s to have that mindset of like, I'm going to do things my way. And, you know, I mean, I'd grown up with so many opinions that I was just like, I'm not going to play by your rules. I'm not going to see myself as you see me. I'm going to own my sexuality for myself. Sexuality is a beautiful thing. And we need to take care of it as women. We need to really make sure that we prioritize it and ourselves and what it means to us, because every woman is different. And I never wanted to also insert the fact that I was so comfortable with my sexuality and like, yeah, like we're going to dance it. We're going to do, you know what I mean? Like all this stuff. I never wanted to also, you know, even though it did anyway, make some women like, you know, uncomfortable with what I was doing, but I never wanted to make it like, you know, you have to be this way too. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has their different comfort zone with it. And just because I want to express myself this way, like let people live.
Totally.
You know, like let everybody own it the way they need to own it. Let's talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
And back then, you know, that's what's cool about what you do is we're able to have these open conversations now. I see women more than ever talking to each other, and it's like okay and so accessible with our phones and like social media. That's the positive of it, and everything is that we get to like have more accessibility
totally.
To each other
totally,
and be like, does this happen to you too?
Like, right, like are we on the same page, girl? Like totally.
Yeah, but I didn't have that back then, so yes, it was very hard and very terrifying, and I took so much personal. I really did. And then you have people in this situation. This is why you're my first podcast, because you're so used to creating these like certain walls and defense mechanisms, because you're just like, people are baiting you, and then you're like, wait, I didn't say that, and I didn't say it like that.
Right.
And you know how it is.
No,
you know,
dude,
how it is.
You're so right, because I feel like your era of coming up, it was like
extra hard. Yeah.
Paparazzi, tabloids. I'm like, holy shit, like people so fixated on every single move. What was dating like for you? What was your dating life like as you were like coming up in your career, like late teens?
I didn't really have time for that, but I did. I always went for things that I would feel safe about. Like, you know, we'd have our, you know, you'd travel and you'd meet certain people, but it's so funny that I gave this persona, because I probably was like the last person to lose my virginity. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I don't know. It was something that was for me, you know what I mean? And that's, I guess, why my messages went the way they did too, is because I owned it first. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter how it goes down, as long as you find your way and your path with being comfortable with yourself. But we always get like off topic. But
when did you lose your virginity?
Bring me back, girl.
Tell us.
It was later than you would think.
Okay.
You know, given the girl that was doing dirty and all this, you know. But yeah, it's more of a funny thing looking back, where it's just like people thought probably like
you were popping off.
But yeah, it was, I had certain dancers that were like close quarter, because you have to like, you know, you're traveling a lot, and you have accessibility to only so many things. So, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know, like, I mean, yeah, I a lot of things that I'm just like, yeah, maybe I should have realized he wasn't looking at me. He wasn't interested in me. You know, like, he was looking at him.
No! Christina! I mean,
there's a lot of things, you know, that I'm just like, oh, sad. Like, I feel bad for, like, my younger self. Like, oh, sad.
I love you, little PR trained. You're like, and maybe a dancer that was more into men, and I should have seen the. So, okay, so you, like, you had an interesting experience. Despite being such an icon, I was looking, I'm like, you don't have too crazy of like a celebrity roster attached to your name.
I know.
And my question is, Miss Aguilera, was that actually because that was intentional, or were you just really good at keeping things hidden and a little secret that we didn't know about?
Yeah, I definitely, I've had my experiences, but I also like, oh, I mean, my life is hectic enough, and like, this is a very narcissistic industry, and like, my anxieties couldn't maybe take somebody that did the exact same thing I did and like ran around and traveled. It's like, I know how this goes. Like, I'm too too vulnerable for this. I'm too sensitive to like be so paranoid. So like, you know, this business is very demanding. It's a lot. And yeah, I just, you know, I've definitely like not been into the celebrity thing.
Right. No, that's really refreshing to hear, because it's like you see some people like trying to it's obvious on the internet, like, oh, this couple is appearing and it's like to stay relevant. And I can imagine how obnoxious like that word is of like being in the industry for so long. It's like, how does the stress of like managers and people being like, we need to stay relevant, we need to do this, like how does that affect you?
It's just annoying more than anything else. I don't want to be corny and be like, but it really is to me about intentions, you know? And if it doesn't feel right to me, like I just can't do it. I have a really hard time forcing myself. It wasn't interesting to me. I don't know.
That's so interesting too, because I feel like
the guys next door.
Interesting. Because you know what is so fascinating? It's like, did anyone ever try to be like, hey, like, look at these people doing couples, like this will make your career even crazier.
Yeah. I've had if it's not real to me and authentic, I can't do it. You know, I can't force something as personal as that.
Totally. I know you mentioned trust issues. Is there any, because I don't think a lot of us can fathom the amount of cameras and paparazzi back then. Like, is there any paranoia that has lingered in you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went through a bad period at a certain time where even, like, the clicking of the camera paparazzi, like just was so, like, upsetting to me. I'd, like, have a panic attack. And I know I've heard other celebrities actually say this, too. And then you have really horrible stories that happen whenever you, again, starting to believe a narrative, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, it's a very weird thing. That kind of attention and that kind of that world. So yeah, that is a part of too why it's just like, you know, it's very anxiety riding for me, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about relationships, and then we're going to talk about sex. First, with relationships, I'm curious because I am currently in therapy, and I think it's so interesting of like, we're all trying to undo shit that our parents fucked us up with. It's just the fact. I don't care if you have perfect parents, then you're still fucked up. Yeah. So it's like, are there any patterns in relationships, previous relationships, that you now kind of recognize that you had to stop and try to break moving forward? Like,
oh, like bad patterns?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's still a process sometimes to really... you have to check yourself too. I think there's accountability in, you know, things that even though they're not your fault, you're still conditioned and programmed in a way of fear and paranoia, and also sometimes not given a good guideline can really mess you up, you know, because then it's like, is this normal or is this just like, or is this something I need to leave the relationship for? Like, right. I'm so like into being like, okay, wait, do I need to be taking this shit right now? Or can I walk the, or should I walk the fuck away? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's normal? What's right. like, so it's a constant. I believe in therapy too. The right kind of therapy.
I know that you mentioned you have like a collection of diaries that you've kept for like 20 some years.
Yeah.
What's a diary entry that makes you kind of sad for your younger self when you read it?
I think just, yeah, how hurt I was, because I was so into this being like, one day I'm gonna make it and I'm gonna, you know, see myself on MTV and like all this stuff. Like it was such a dream, and coming from such a good place to all of a sudden you're shook by all the shit that comes with the success. And yeah, I think it's like, it's sad when I see how some like press and articles and some interviews that were just so taken out of context or just mean, like how hurt I was by that, truly like affected. And then yeah, it just makes you internalize negative thoughts about yourself and feelings.
If you can share, what was something specific?
You know, back then there was a lot of like, you know, it was a different business where there was a lot of, you know, female comparisons and double standards with women. And it was a constant like pitting against each other, and like it just felt like just punches in the face, and it was just, you know, yeah, it's fucking hard. It was hard to just constantly feel like, you know, you're making music and doing something you love, and then, you know, someone spinning something so negative about it. And it was just, it was really hard, because sometimes who you were pitted against, you actually genuinely, you know, loved mm-hmm. and like respected. So it was just like, you know, but again, then you have people like baiting you and do you know what she said about you? Well, you know what I mean? And then you're like, wait, what? You know, so it's just like, and you're too much of a kid to understand like what's happening. I hated that shit, you know, like that's why also like now I'm just so excited to see, you know, more, you know, exposed women supporting mm-hmm. women, because now you're cutting through the middleman a lot more, mm-hmm. which is really, really nice.
Yeah, I think it clearly worked for the tabloids to have characters and ideas yeah. of, if we pit this person against this person, this is going to sell through, because these yeah. are two huge names or three huge names or this cut, like
yeah.
it's so insane. And but then it's like, I'm an individual, why can't I just be Christina Aguilera, this incredible singer, and leave it at that, and then let everyone also have their own careers, because there's so many other people thriving. That must have been very
I remember there was a headline that was like comparing me with another artist, and it was like, it's like Roe versus Wade, pick a side, you know. And I was like, oh my god, you're so dramatic, like
you're like, it's not that serious.
Too young to even really understand what that meant, so I was like, just understand the level of like how young I was being thrust into this world that was like, wait, what are you saying? What are you saying?
Dude, the pettiness to compare people to Roe v. Wade. Like, let's tone it down a notch, TMZ or whoever the fuck, you know what I mean?
I know. Holy, it was like a newspaper. It wasn't even like it was too much.
Okay. I love to ask people this because it does give insight. What is your biggest insecurity?
Girl. What is my biggest insecurity? Oh my god, I really wasn't prepared for that question. I don't know. I could think of, I mean, every day it's something different. Mm-hmm. It's a part of you. Like, what is my biggest insecurity? Biggest insecurity, I think we all have this where we just don't feel good enough. I don't know, in every sense, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we can all pick different parts of ourselves and pick ourselves apart for forever, but I really, it's something you have to train yourself against.
When you say you're not good enough, okay. Take a sip. She's coming back. No, but when you say you're not good enough,
everything, like, you know, I mean, I think this business operates like a business, you know, and it's a whole self-worth mm-hmm. thing. And then image, yeah, I've been through the gamut of, you know, people growing up in this business, they're going to see you as a teenager, a kid, they're going to see you as a young woman coming into your body and expressing yourself, they're going to see you as a grown woman, they're going to see you be pregnant, they're going to see you go through the gamut of different places and stages of your life where you're different kind of weights. And, you know, we all go through these things as women in general. But yeah, it's so hard to just be inundated with different opinions. And everybody has different standards for what they want. But again, women like embracing this now more than ever.
Yeah. Not being good enough, I think, is the perfect answer that makes sense of just a culmination of this whole interview, is like mm-hmm. you wanting to be yourself and being in an industry where it's like picking apart every fucking thing you do, whether it's the people you're working with or the media. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's never good enough. It's never good enough. It's almost
it's never.
Right?
Never. Because everyone has a definition of what good enough means. Mm-hmm. And then the same people that are rating good enough don't feel good about themselves. And so mm-hmm. like, where is this all like stemming? So totally. It's cyclical, and you have to really isolate your perspective, because even whenever, you know, someone's comparing you to someone else, you're like, well, wait, should I be comparing? Like, you start just second guessing yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's tough out there.
It's that's tough out there. And how we get through that is by having sex. That transition, I'm like, no. Let's talk about sex.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by eBay. You know real when you get it, right, Daddy Gang? It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. So ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Tap the banner to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Monday Hair Care. Daddy Gang, nobody likes Mondays. Am I right? We're all sobbing and we're barely getting out of bed on a Monday. But Monday Hair Care is here to flip the script with its award-winning formulas. No more bad hair days, Daddy Gang. Monday Hair Care is turning Mondays into a reason to celebrate good hair, which I love, thank God, with 7 new products like a leave-in conditioner, dry shampoo, a curl line, and body wash. And Daddy Gang, every single thing is under $10. Yes. And smell is to die for. Okay. I want my hair smelling like something that Matt wants to be engulfed in. I want him to come out to me and go, oh my God, you smell amazing. Oh my God, what is that in your hair? So Daddy Gang, reclaim the week with Monday at all leading retailers. Visit MondayHairCare.com to find a stockist near you. This episode is brought to you by new Garnier Fructis hair filler with vitamin C, G. Many things can damage your hair, like heat styling and bleaching, but the all new Garnier Fructis hair filler systems can reverse up to 1 year of damage to your hair smoothness in just one use, giving you up to 79% stronger hair and up to 4 times less breakage. And all Garnier products are approved by Cruelty Free International under the Leaping Bunny program. New Garnier Fructis hair filler, pre-shampoo, shampoo, conditioner, and serum are available now on Amazon and at Walmart, Target, Ulta, Drug, and select grocery stores. Learn more at GarnierUSA.com.
What is your favorite part about sex?
Getting off. I mean, like, but it's not that cut and dry. Mm-hmm. My favorite part, I love intimacy. It depends. Every person is different. And that's what I love about sexuality. Mm-hmm. I love getting into it and finding out how everyone operates, mm-hmm. you know. How much of a freak are you? How much of a, you know, submissive are you? Like, what is your playground?
How much of a freak are you, Christina?
How much of a freak are you?
I would say, I actually, this is a question because I will answer that. I will say I remember my sex in college. I had lost my virginity in high school and I was like, I don't even know what I was supposed to just feel from that. Like, what the fuck just happened? Like, was that supposed to feel good?
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, I felt like, oh, I'm like having good sex. No, I fucking wasn't. No, I fucking wasn't. I thought, because I was comparing it to high school sex, which was like literally sandpaper and it was like awful feeling. I'm like, then I think as I started to explore my sexuality more, like junior, senior year of college, I started to be more confident and kind of being like, fuck the guy. Like, I'm going to get myself off. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got a vibrator and I started to use lube. And it's like, when you can get yourself off first and you're like, oh, that is what I want to feel every time I'm fucking a guy, a girl, that whoever it is. Yes. So I would say, as I've explored more in the bedroom, I've just naturally become more of a freak because I'm like, I want to feel this. I want to feel this with my partner. I want us to like explore new things together, if that makes sense. So it's been like a gradual progression. But I would say like I wasn't like fucking like great in college, and I thought I was like a freak.
But nobody, you know, nobody is. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what they're doing at first. Mm-hmm. That's why it should feel like exploration, mm-hmm. and it's okay. But you're so insecure, mm-hmm. at that age, and you see these movies, mm-hmm. and all that. You just want to have it all figured out right off the bat, or you're too, you know, young to speak, mm-hmm. up for yourself. And you know, it kills me too whenever you're grown and you feel too insecure to speak up for yourself, mm-hmm. when you're not in a relationship that feels safe enough for you to have these conversations or even to compare notes with other women, mm-hmm. you know, because it's so shameful. But sex is fun, mm-hmm. and knowing your body is so important, you know, and you're only going to know your body when you spend time with yourself first, so that you even know what to ask, yeah. for from your partner or what you like.
Do you incorporate toys into the bedroom?
I do. I mean, like, you know, as you mentioned, the vibrator was a game changer whenever I was, you know, first exploring myself and, you know, first sex store I ever went into. And, you know, I was just like, oh my God. I literally remember even having like this little like pocket size one I could like pack in my bag on an airplane. Like, I was horny, like, you know what I mean? Like,
are you getting off on an airplane?
I know, she's getting excited just talking about it, but that's how it should be. Yes, of course. Are you kidding me? Like, sometimes it's an anxiety thing too. Like, a lot of girls, like, when I'm nervous, like, I would feel it very early on, like, when I was, like, in school, like, even as a girl, if, like, I felt nervous about something, I would be like, oh.
Yeah, you're like, oh, when did you start masturbating? When was the first time you masturbated?
Oh my God, when was? Oh, well, I think we all kind of like start, mm-hmm. as little girls, mm-hmm. like when you rub up against, mm-hmm. things and it feels good. And, you know, like, you know, I think that's also whenever it's just like you have to be like, it's okay. Like, that's for, you know, have your private time. Yes. So you're not doing it in front of like company. Yes. Like, you have to learn these things. And sometimes we don't have good teachers and that make us feel safe. So that came early on.
Yeah,
so it,
yeah.
was like, you know, some people I think have more sensitive areas, mm-hmm. and I've always been engaged with,
I love
with
it.
Understanding there's things happening down there.
Christina is masturbating on planes. She's getting off. She's having the best time of her life. What is your best skill in the bedroom?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, where do I begin?
I mean, hands down, it's gotta be blowjobs. I mean, I love a blowjob, you know? I mean, I enjoy it. Like, mm-hmm. I had a lot of also like male friends who I was always like, and what do you do here? Like, I grew up around them. So it's like, I know every different part and the sensitive areas. And I do enjoy it. I hear some women don't like it, but I don't know, man. It's a turn on, you know?
It is, because, and I love that you're saying that too, because like, we're like, we can enjoy ourselves, mm-hmm. get off. There's nothing better than if a guy actually knows how to eat you out. But there's something so hot about pleasuring your partner, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because that gets me off. I don't want like him to not be enjoying it, because I know I'm going to be enjoying myself. Mm-hmm. Do you have any little tips? Is there any, you're like, I know the areas, like, what areas,
well,
Christina?
Well, again, sexuality is a very, you know, specific thing. So, like, what one guy might like, another one doesn't, you know? Like, there are some guys that don't like their balls being touched, mm-hmm. or tampered with. There are some guys that like brutal things happening to them. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of different levels, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why it's important to, like, be with a partner where you can really just explore, mm-hmm. and there's still a lot more things that I have not explored yet that are on my to-do list. And you know, I think, you know, it's hard when you also have kids,
mm-hmm. you're trying,
like,
to keep it PG.
You know, sometimes it's been like, oh, okay, and you're here, okay, amazing. So it's a lot of things, but it's something you have to make time for. But yeah, I love that. And I also, like, I mean, I think there's something to be said after you put in the hard work. I think swallowing is really, you know, a good thing. And it's got a lot of protein, I have to say. I'm a promoter of the swallow, okay? I didn't put in that hard work for nothing, you know? We went in there, I got tugged and pulled and, like, you know, there's things happening, you know, maybe gagged. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, hey, whatever your pleasure points are, but it's fun. It should be fun, you know, as long as you feel good and safe with your partner, whatever your bag is. But
I fucking love you. I love you so much. That was fucking amazing. Okay, top three sex positions.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. I think, oh, you're fun. I don't think, mm-hmm. you know, like, you're actually safe to talk to. It's not mm-hmm. creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a male journalist, like Christina, yeah, I mean, top three. You're like,
I don't have sex anymore. Definitely a new dawn, new day to mm-hmm. be, like, safe about it. It depends on the mood. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I mean, I love a lot of positions. Sometimes it's nice, like early in the morning, like from your side, from behind. And it's like there's like holding involved and like, you know, spooning involved. I love to cuddle. I love to feel like safe and protected. But then it's like I get too hot and then I'm like, okay, leave me alone. I just wanted to feel it for a second. And then I'm good. But
no, the morning from the side is also so nice because it's like we're half doing it, we're not. But it's like kind of a nice wake up. You can get your vibrator in there.
And then your ass starts being like, oh, and then you're pulling. I mean, I like it. The chairs might be on me.
Because then halfway through, you're like doing it from the side, and then you like kind of flip on your stomach, and then it's from behind. The whole thing is nice.
It's so good. I mean, you know, you don't know where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Sky's the limit. But there's that. Yeah, like some good like doggy sometimes, like in the shower. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I've been, you know, there's been some good times, you know, like there's like the studio soundboard, been, you know, been bent over there a couple times. It's fun, you know, use your imagination, you know.
Christina, I love that.
The plane can be fun. We've definitely hid some things under the blankets when the seats are big enough to like, you know, we've been, you know, I can't believe we didn't get caught like so many times in so many situations. Like, thank the Lord, but
I have always thought about that, but I feel like I'm too much of like a pussy that I was like, fuck, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
Are you talking about a private plane though?
No, I'm not actually. On international flights, you know, okay. when they turn mm-hmm. the light off, like the chairs mm-hmm. are like, I don't know where you're sitting, mm-hmm. but you know, there's always like, you know, room for like get creative. And you use, you know, blankets. It's like the position we just talked about, the little spoon. It's like, oh, I feel safe with my partner here. Like, we're just sleeping together.
The flight attendant's like, ma'am?
Yeah. No, you got to wait till everyone's, like, going to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah. You got to, you know, setting the mood.
Everyone's like, note to self. Try to find Christina Aguilera on a flight at some point in life and sit next to her. Oh, my God. That's iconic.
Follow these instructions.
I love how open you are just about all this because, again, I think something I've tried to do in my show and I love that you are doing is talking about this. It should not be shameful. We should not be embarrassed. Like, we're celebrating the fact that we've been repressed for so many fucking years to even enjoy ourselves, to even acknowledge, like, the lower half of our body and what's going on down there. And I think it's important for women like us to sit here and casually talk about something because I know how many women are at home being like, if Christina Aguilera can talk, and she's casually coming out being like, this, like, it just is. It's an exciting new era, I feel like, for women. And it's like we get to own our shit and be like, fuck you. If you want to call us a slut or a whore or whatever, we don't care because we're not. We're just enjoying ourselves and doing what we should be doing, which is celebrating our bodies and doing the same thing that men have done forever.
It's true. It's really, really true. I think because of generations of like not knowing how to talk about it, being shamed for it, it being like, you know, something that's very, you know, celebrated from a male's point of view and objectified, that we don't know where we stand with it. But now more than ever, I feel like this generation is like having none of it. And we want to talk about it. We want to engage. We want to be educated about it. We want to know what's good for it. And we should. Now's the time for that. And making sure, you know, that's why it's like music and lyrics. You know, I had a song called Sex for Breakfast on my, you know, one of my albums. We've never been shy about things, but this is literally, you know, just the next progression for me. And in passing something down to my daughter that she can enjoy and understand, like, this is nothing to be ashamed of. This is healthy, natural, put good things on it, you know, vitamins for there.
Vitamins for there. Okay, talk to me about Playground a little bit, because why did you decide to be a part of this?
Well, I think the authenticity behind mm-hmm. what it means to me, being always in the forefront, either defending, you know, or celebrating or opening conversations and doors for women to be able to feel safe enough to talk about their sexuality and what that means for them. Because, mm-hmm. again, everybody is so different and there's no shame in the game. I just want to really just now at this point in my life, mm-hmm. being a mother who has a daughter who's developing her own relationship with her body and asking me, you know, when she sees, you know, that time of the month for me, like, what's a tampon? What does mm-hmm. it do? You know, how am I going to approach these conversations? And in making her make sure that she feels she's taking care of herself so that she can also engage with a future healthy relationship that's mm-hmm. sex positive.
Yeah.
Sex is very important. I love the product, Playground. It's all safe. It's all natural. And it just, you know, feels good. You know, we've explored with this, you know, safe for you. And it's so pretty. It fits in like the palm of your, I love it
because
you can put it on your nightstand. It's like your bedside best friend is what I like to call her. And this is a product that's literally good for you mm-hmm. and good for your vagina. And like, why aren't we paying more attention to that for ourselves?
And I love that you're saying, like, why can't we just walk into stores and be like, I'm going to buy this for my vagina. I'm going to buy this for my armpits. Like, it should yeah. feel like a whole wellness check that yeah. I don't think also women feel like lube specifically has had such a negative connotation because yeah. oh, you're so dry. And then a man is like, oh, are you not turned on? And it's like, no, you idiot. That has actually nothing to do with you. Nothing. Like, what a concept. It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I feel like there's still this shame around like pulling out lube. And all I can ever say is like, if you aren't using lube, you're not having the best sex you could be having. Point blank.
Yes.
Point blank. Sex is 10 times better with lube. That's a
1,000%. And it's like, we wouldn't think of like doing things to our face. Like, we moisturize. Mm-hmm. There's women that we do 10-step beauty mm-hmm. routines and mm-hmm. things. We wouldn't think of like going through a drugstore and not hitting that section, not doing something moisturizing for our hair. Like, this is the epicenter of mm-hmm. power. Like, we need to be nurturing and taking care of and celebrating this very important part. It literally, yeah, it's the star of the show. So we literally need to be giving, you know, nurture, tender love and care to it. And also it should be explored. Mm-hmm. And what better to help do this than, you know, sometimes it's a little.
You got a little, you know, something down there.
Good. Yeah.
Last question.
Last. Overall, ready?
Like, no, girl. Wait. In a 2018 Billboard interview, you told the journalist to write great things about you. Do you have any great things about yourself that you want to share with the world that you feel like maybe people don't know about you or misunderstand about you, that you're like, you know what, listen to this?
Yeah, I grew up at a time again where there was like a lot of negativity that was, you know, just always trying to be you know, poked, you know. And I'm also, you know I have no time for like negativity. And it's like, I've been in the business long enough to know, like, you know, I just want none of it anymore to be a part of like the headline. And it's like something that, you know, as a grown woman, you can have more control over. But, you know, I don't like getting poked under the table mm-hmm. because then the claws come out. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in an elevated time in all of our lives where we are more open and talking to each other. And I want peaceful energy, peaceful vibes. Like, I don't need to be talking about things that happened, you know, decades ago. Mm-hmm. Like, let's grow up. Let's embrace. Like, now more than ever is the time for that. And so I think, you know, don't poke the bear anymore. Like, don't poke me under the table, because I'm not gonna be baited anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like mm-hmm. It happened for a long time too, and this happened even, you know, after I had my babies. It's like a lot of people because they're, you know, they need some attention too. They're like, I'll get poked under the table and be like, it's one of those passive, what do you call these people that are just passive aggressive? They'll poke under the table when no one's looking, then be like, I don't know why she's so upset. I don't know. She's crazy. You know what I mean?
And you're like, just leave me alone.
Manipulative, like, because, like, yeah, don't poke me too much. Like, let's not get it twisted, though. I'm sensitive and all that, but I'm a tough cookie. At the end of the day, I truly don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I just really don't. And I, you know, this is why, like, I just don't have time for the petty bullshit or, you know, just, you know, sometimes, you know, the celebrity status stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I want to live a real life and a loving life, you know?
Right.
And I want good things around. My energy space is so important to preserve that. And for my children, you know?
No, I appreciate you explaining that because it's also like, I get what you're saying. It's like, I'm trying to be over here living my life.
Yeah.
Stop trying to have me come back into the bullshit that I was in for
decades,
so long.
Decades. Grown women shit now.
Truly.
Kids involved. Examples.
Christina, I honestly cannot thank you enough for coming on. I know you don't do this often, and like,
I appreciate
getting to know you truly. I respected you before, but like, naturally when you get to know someone, the respect just grows, and you're such a strong, inspirational human being, and I am so happy I got to sit with
you so much. I love you too.
This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. Want $0 delivery fees? Try Dash Pass by DoorDash. Daddy gang, I love being home. I love to be cozy, comfortable, laying on the couch. I can't tell you how many times I need something, but I am too lazy to get up and get out of the house. And sometimes I need food or groceries, you name it. Dash Pass gets it delivered right to my door and yours too. It is only $9.99 a month, so I think it's a really good deal, Daddy Gang. So get $0 delivery fees on eligible orders with Dash Pass, and new members get a 30-day free trial. Terms apply. Sign up today.